It wasn't a person. You know it wasn't a person.
Skate!
Beautiful fajitas and spicy frijoles.
Oh, it is so on.
Back for part two.
What?
Part two, CSI.
CSI part two. Everybody, welcome to Sorta Cinema.
I did it. I don't like that.
No.
You do it.
Yeah. Welcome to Sorta Cinema.
Yay! My name's Ryan Chu.
My name's Dalton James. We didn't say that last week.
Oh, fuck.
That's okay.
Yeah, because it's your thing. And then I tried to take it for this one, and you just got mad at me.
I didn't get mad. You said it felt weird. Look, last week on the episode,
some two weirdos took our spots, took our voices.
Columbo was here. We walked in and Columbo is here. And
hey,
two people that
I'm still here.
He's still here. He hides under the table.
Yeah, it's me. I'm just going to hang out in the back for a little bit if you don't mind.
Yeah, you stay over there, Columbo.
Okay.
Last week we covered the first half, the first episode in Grave Danger. I actually don't know if we said the name of the fucking episode.
You keep saying we, but you have one job at the top of the episode.
I do have one job. Grave Danger.
It's CSI.
Who's upset now?
It's CSI, baby.
CSI.
It's Crime Scene Investigation.
It's Crime Scene Investigation.
We watched Season 5, Episode 24 last week. That was Grave Danger, Part 1. If you haven't heard it yet, please go back and listen, because a lot of this might not make as much sense.
No.
But you know what? You're still going to have a great fucking time.
You're going to have a great time.
If you don't have time in your day to go back and listen to last week's episode, then you should just... No.
Whoa!
No. Cut it. If you don't have enough time in your day to listen to the episode before, I promise you, you'll have a great time listening to this one, whether or not you listen to part one. That you can jump in. We're going to give you a little recap as far as what happened in part one.
Yeah. Actually, CSI itself was going to give a recap because they did it previously.
Yeah.
So we don't have to.
Exactly. And we encourage you.
The listener.
To listen.
Yeah.
To continue listening.
It's your one job.
You listen.
We make you listen. It's easy.
Dalton's struggling a little bit with his part of the job, which is to recount the name of the episode and
when it came out.
You did that.
Yeah.
I remember you said that.
Yeah. And who directed it and who wrote it. I did that part.
Yeah, we're here.
We didn't say our names.
Look,
I'm Dalton. This is Ryan.
We're recording both of these episodes in the same day.
Yeah.
So, and then when we watched both of them together, which is, the last time we did this was Doc West, where we watched both parts in the same day together and then recorded both the episodes together.
Yeah.
This is a lot, okay? It's okay that you missed the fucking key information in the first one, all right?
Okay. I feel better about it. Yeah. What's been a week for you, the listener, has been merely minutes for us.
Moments, even.
Mere moments.
Less than minutes.
And because of that, I do remember that last week we raised the question about whether blood splatter is a bunk science or not.
Yeah, I put forth that in a lot of the television that I watch, that the blood spatter analysts seem to be very keen.
Yeah.
That they're able to determine the, where the victim was attacked, where the attacker was, what the weapon used was, at which angle, with the velocity, all this different information just by looking at little droplets of blood on the wall.
Yes. In reality, it is used and it is admissible in court, but there is a lot of people that have issues with how accurate it is. There was an article I was reading that was saying that if you were to show one analyst blood splatter and another analyst blood splatter, between 7 and 11% of the time, they will come up with different conclusions about the same blood splatter. So it is something that I think is not, I will not call it pseudoscience.
I feel shitty, but I just need to clarify this statistic. If you were to ask Wouldn't it be a large group of scientists?
Yeah, not one, not two. Because, a large group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is a discrepancy between 7
If you were to ask 100 scientists to analyze the blood, between 7 and 10 of them would give you a completely different explanation.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes, not yes. There's two scientists. And there's a 7 to 10% chance that one of them is wrong.
Well, I mean, technically, there would be a 7 to 10% that one of them would have a different conclusion. It's just that it would be difficult to do that with two people. But
I think that the percentages change when you have less of a sample size.
They do. They do. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a scientist.
That's not the point.
That's not the point.
That's not why we're here. I did find, you know, just a little bit more on, in 1957, California Supreme Court became the first American court to accept testimony examining bloodstains. Before that, bloodstains were not admissible in court.
Yes.
In 2009, though, the National Academy of Sciences found that expert analysis was a subjective conclusion and not a scientific one.
Yeah, so it's like an art and not a science, mm-hmm. and it is something that I think could bolster a case, but probably would not be able to be used as the sole evidence to convict someone.
And also, like, the National Academy of Sciences. Oh, like,
who even are they?
Yeah.
We got crime scene investigators that
so
think different.
I just spit on that wall.
Oh, man, Columbo's back. I told him to go in the corner.
And you see, when you spit on a wall, your mouth can make two kinds of droplets. You can either hack a loogie, I'm sure you're familiar with that term, or you can spray. It's an aerosolization of spit. Blood does this as well. You familiar?
Columbus and blood stain analysis guy. Yeah. I love that.
But he can never get to the point.
No.
He's always, you see, if I were to sit here with a jar of mayo, and I were to dress a sandwich as one does, and my hand were to slip, let's say the knife were to go flying, mayo's going one way, the knife's going the other, mayo ends up on the wall, how am I going to get that stain out? Some kind of heat, right?
You ever had Miracle Whip?
So I get an iron. I get a wet towel. I put the wet towel on the wall. I put the iron on top of the wet towel. We got steam now, right?
What is happening?
We're pulling mayo out of the wall. There's no more mayo stain. You thought you had a stain of mayo? Well, it turns out a little bit of steam, a little bit of water can clear everything out of the way. So that's what happened. He died, and it was her fault.
Wow. Cleaning tips with Columbo. How to get mayo out of a wall. Oh, wow. So we have...
Is that ketchup on your shirt?
We have a brief clip here that actually does a really good job summarizing last week's episode. We're just going to play that.
Previously on CSI.
I've got an assault at Stripperama and a trash run at Flamingo and Cobalt.
Boy, better food.
I didn't even notice that the first time. I've got an assault at Stripperama.
Yeah. That happens every day.
Stripperama?
Stripperama, baby.
That sounds incredible.
Oh, I love Stripperama.
Oh, it's a Stripperama. It's not just a strip show. It's a stripper. It's a stripaganza.
A stripaganza.
It's a stripazorgasborg.
That was less good. It feels like there's a buffet there, and I don't want that.
No.
I'm going to hurt you.
Kids, have fun at the trash one.
Lab's on
showing Nick get kidnapped.
Why'd you bag that?
I didn't.
That's not Nick's evidence.
Maybe it's a message.
Nick could be anywhere from Green Valley to Seven Hills to Arizona.
Guy comes in here with a package with no return address. It's about Nick.
Hi, CSI guy. You're wondering why you're here?
Wondering.
Because you followed the evidence.
I don't think he knows we can see him. But if they're going to keep him alive for 12 hours, it must mean that he's got an additional air supply.
The feed stays active for 2 minutes every time you press the watch button.
I say we keep the light on.
I got called out to a pickup on Viking Circle. I just found an abandoned package with some cash taped to it.
Yeah, the address was a waste of time.
The guy probably picked the house at random because he knew we'd chase it.
Has Nick's family been informed?
That would be my job.
We're not sure who has your son.
What the hell do you know?
Ah, Poncho. What the hell you got yourself into?
The city of Las Vegas is not going to finance a ransom.
I need $1 million, and I need it now.
If you're coming to me like a cop with a tin cup in your hand, the answer is no.
And if the press finds out about this, it'll look like Sam Braun bribed the lab.
You got a better plan, I'm all ears.
What does Nick Stokes mean to you? Does your soul die every time you push that button? Welcome to my world.
So that's the recap. There's clips you heard, there's clips you didn't hear.
Yeah.
Maybe you heard some details we left out because it didn't matter.
Well, and honestly, from a listener's perspective, I would understand if you got to the end of that and you were like, I don't actually understand, like, what the fuck was that? Like, there were just, it was kind of a bunch of disjointed stuff.
Yeah.
If you're watching the clips visually, I could see them making a little bit more sense. Perhaps if you listened to the first episode with us, a lot of that might make sense, but maybe it didn't, you know? So I'm going to give you just a quick little rundown. Some of the things that rundown was giving us. This is what happened in the last episode. So we've got Nick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nick is a member of the crime scene investigation lab. He
suicide.
Crime scene investigation.
Yeah,
we're watching crime scene investigation this week, and on this week's episode of crime scene investigation, or last week's episode of crime scene investigation, Nick is a crime scene investigator. He works for a crime scene investigation lab.
Yeah,
he was at the scene of a crime, investigating that scene of the crime as a crime scene investigator.
If you say that one more time, I'm gonna lose my mind.
But I kind of want to do the whole recap like this.
Okay.
So Nick, the crime scene investigator, was crime scene investigating a crime scene.
Yes.
He was there at the crime scene when a crime was committed upon him.
Yep.
A criminal showed up to the crime scene while he was investigating and kidnapped him, thereby committing another crime.
Yes.
So now we've got two crime scenes that are at the same crime scene. Oh. The first crime scene that Nick went to go investigate as the crime scene investigator, and now a second crime scene that, as him getting kidnapped, then becomes a crime scene. The crime scene investigator becomes part of the crime scene, right?
Yes.
So Nick has been kidnapped.
Yes.
The CSI office, the crime scene investigation office, they go on the search. They're looking for their guy.
They're investigating.
The crime scene office receives a mysterious envelope with Nick's name on it, right? They open up the envelope. They find a USB stick. They find an audio recorder. Audio recorder kind of doesn't really fucking matter.
Just taunting them.
Although the USB stick takes them to a website. This website has a live feed of our crime scene investigator, Nick. He's underground. He's been put into some kind of coffin. He's been buried alive. Nick, the crime scene investigator, has been buried alive.
He's in grave danger.
Exactly. Catherine, another crime scene investigator who works for the crime scene investigation office, goes to talk to her dad. But she's not investigating a crime, although her father's a criminal. She's not investigating any sort of crime. Correct. What she's going there for is to get money to pay the ransom, to pay the guy who kidnapped Nick, and to save Nick from the criminal. So she gets the money from her father. She gives it to her crime scene investigation partner, Grissom. Grissom takes that money. He goes to an abandoned warehouse to exchange the money for Nick's life. At this warehouse, he finds the kidnapper. He gives the money to the kidnapper. Kidnapper receives the money and then lets him know that he's not there for the money after all.
It's true.
He reveals that he has plastic explosives tied to his waist and blows himself up in front of Grissom.
Along with the money.
Along with the money, but thankfully, not along with Grissom. Grissom's okay.
Which brings us to episode 2, which opens in the very warehouse that the explosion has just occurred in. So Grissom's getting checked out by the ambulance. They're making sure he's okay. His ears are ringing. He's kind of fucked up.
Yeah,
he just survived. A bomb just exploded in front of his goddamn face. And then there's crime scene investigators all around. CSI bros. I'm doing it now too. They're checking out the scene. They're looking for clues. We got Warwick. Warwick's looking at a Ford Expedition, the very one that was in the security camera footage from the first episode. Mm-hmm. He's checking the odometer out. He's realized that the last trip that this Ford Expedition took was 70 miles. They're trying, they come to the conclusion that this is definitely the crime scene. This is the man that kidnapped our buddy Nick. This is the van that he was in.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find our buddy.
Sarah, another one of the crime scene investigators, she's investigating the crime, as one does, and she stumbles upon a thumb. She finds a thumb, just a loose thumb. She says, hey, everybody, I got a thumb. And everyone else is like, yeah, we all have them, Sarah.
I got two.
Surprise!
We all got thumbs.
And depending on how you look at feet, I might have four, because I got two big toes.
We don't call those thumbs.
Yeah, but
foot thumbs?
You cut off a thumb, you could stick a toe on if you really wanted to.
That sounds like some Columbo logic.
Yeah, but I lost a finger. Here, let me put both my thumbs next to each other. you notice anything weird about the right one? It's actually my big toe.
He's got one left eye that's glass, and he's got two thumbs, toe thumbs on his hands.
This elbow, it's off a mannequin from Macy's. None of my body parts are real. You ever seen RoboCop? You see, the thing about RoboCop.
Oh, God. I can't hear a RoboCop recap from Columbo. It briefly cuts to the coffin, and Nick is just...
He's still having a hard time.
Yeah, his time didn't get any better.
If you were watching us last week, and you're like, oh, he's been having a hard time this whole week.
Yeah, no, he's been having a very... He's been in this coffin for a week.
to you guys.
He's realizing while in the coffin that the fans shut off, that pump fresh air into his, like, plexiglass coffin. They shut off every time the lights turn on, and the lights turn on every time they hit the live stream button.
He doesn't know that they're on the live stream, but he does know that the lights are somehow connected to the fan.
Yeah, he keeps seeing them turn on, and he's saying, like, turn the lights off. I don't need the lights on. There's no audio for the webcam. So they're just seeing him freak out every time the lights turn on. He's not having a good time, and he's running out of oxygen because they have that live stream on pretty much 24/7.
Yeah, because they want to know, like, what's up with him. They want to make sure that he's okay.
Yeah, I would have it on as well.
They don't know that it's a bad thing that the lights are on. It then cuts back to the crime scene investigation lab. You see a few of them kind of looking at this scene, him with the lights going out and stuff, him getting nervous. They don't really know what's going on. Sarah, she's the one who found the thumb earlier. Mm-hmm. She runs a fingerprint analysis on the detached thumb. No matches were found, unfortunately. So Warwick, while he's looking at the camera, while he's watching Nick underground, he sees Nick pull out the gun that was placed in the coffin with him.
Yeah, the gun that was placed there, clearly to give him an out.
Yeah.
Which is pretty dark.
Because it looks like Nick is about to take this out.
Yeah.
He pulls out the gun, and he holds it up to his chin, and we're like, all right, here we go.
He also takes a piece of bubble gum. I mentioned bubble gum last week, and I said this might come up again. Mm-hmm. He chews up a piece of bubble gum, and he sticks it in his ear.
Yeah, he, like, breaks it in half, puts one half in each ear.
He makes, like, makeshift, like, double bubble earplugs.
Yeah,
pretty cool.
We don't know if the people that are watching the live stream, if, like, Warwick, can see the bubble gum.
It doesn't seem like he does, because he doesn't seem like, oh, he's plugging his ears. Clearly, he's not trying to take his...
He's going
to
shoot something else.
He's going to shoot something else is what I would think.
Well, and like we know about gun safety, and you should never point a gun anywhere that you don't want it to be shot. And he's a crime scene investigator, and the barrel of the gun is touching the bottom of his chin.
Yeah. I think that's because he can't move his arms around.
Yeah.
Because he's in a really tight, confined space.
But
so it looks like he's holding the gun to his head, but he's not. It's just... That's just angles.
Yeah, but he eventually is able to kind of shimmy, maneuver around. He gets the gun out from underneath his chin. He's able to point it at one of the lights that's at the base of his coffin, and he fires. He shoots out the light. I think in his mind, he's like, well, if I cut out the power to the light, maybe all the power will go to the fan instead. We know that that's not really how power works, but
no.
Maybe in his mind, he's like, whoever's in control of the lights won't need the lights anymore because I just shot them out, so we'll just go all fan.
Yeah,
we'll go all
fan.
It ends up being a great idea to shoot out the lights, but also, how would he know to make that great idea?
I guess, you know, you're in a coffin with a gun, you got limited options. You got bubble gum, you got a gun, you got glow sticks. I'm going to shoot the light. I mean, I would. I don't know about you.
You know, the thing about lights, though. Oh, God, I mean, yeah, like, I might have shot the lights. If I had known that there was people watching me, like, I might have just, like...
Signaled?
Yeah, signaled or, like, blocked out the lights with my hands so that they would know. Like, but he doesn't know that, no. You know? I guess if you don't have many options, you shoot out the light. I also, like, after a certain period of time, like, once you're under there for long enough...
You might,
like,
start losing your mind.
Yeah, like, I might just start shooting the coffin. Like, I feel like I would curl up, like, if I was buried underground in a plexiglass coffin.
Yeah.
The first thing I would do would probably be scream, like normal people, you know, yelling and stuff. I would probably be pounding and scratching, and then eventually I would probably get to a point where it's like, all right, if I'm just going to be stuck down here, this is like probably multiple days underground before I get to this point, I'll probably curl up to one side of the coffin and then shoot. I don't know. Either shoot the other side of the coffin so the other side of the wall caves in, or shoot the side that I'm under so that I have access out. I don't know yet. I don't know what the best...
You don't know how much dirt is on top of you.
Yeah, I would just kind of hope, though, that there's not going to be very much.
I would probably do it early on before I could become really weak with dehydration.
And yeah, that's true, too. You don't want to wait too long.
Because you're going to have a harder time, because if it is crawlable... You want that extra energy.
Yeah, I would probably shoot the other side of the coffin so that the side that I'm on still has some kind of structural support so that the wall falls out of the other side and so I can slowly kind of start digging my way out. Yeah. It's just the one problem in that, we talked about this briefly before, sometimes you don't know which way's up and down.
Yeah.
So I'd have to establish some kind of way, like maybe one of my hands is always touching the base of the coffin.
Yeah.
So that I know where the bottom is. You know, I could determine based on some kind of spit test which way's up and down before that.
Mm-hmm.
Still though,
no, when you have dirt packed on you, you don't want to start crawling the wrong direction.
Yeah, no fucking way.
Really bad. Yeah, I can see a lot of thoughts going through my head.
Yeah,
and this might be the thoughts that Nick is having in these moments,
because he shoots out the light.
He's in the dark. He feels relieved.
We then see Sarah. She's there at the crime scene investigation lab.
She's staring at a water fountain.
She's a little sad about the water fountain.
She's zoning out.
Some of the other people that are working there ended up doing more tests on the thumbprint. They confirm her findings that there are no matchable fingerprints, but they do find possibly something else. Let's see maybe what they have to say.
Sarah, I got something off your thumb.
I love how she says that. My thumb?
When you struck out on Prince, I ran DNA through CODIS, hoping maybe the guy was in the system off an open case or a prior felony. I got no straight-up match, but...
But you got a moderate stringency match for a Kelly Gordon.
Yeah, 7 alleles in common, and based on the age, I'd say it was his daughter.
Good work, man.
Now, I could be crazy, and we can cut this if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that's Aisha Tyler.
Yeah. I think it is.
Yeah, I think that's Aisha Tyler, and she seems to not be a main character in the show at this point.
No, she only gets one.
She only gets one line. This might be pre-Aisha Tyler. Aisha Tyler.
Before the Aisha period.
Yeah.
The era of Aisha.
Just know she was just looking for DNA on thumbs before she became Archer's love interest.
So what Aisha Tyler has discovered for us is that there is, in fact, a DNA match. It's a partial match to the daughter of the guy who was there, who was exploded.
Yeah.
They are kind of looking at her file and stuff, and they find that she was convicted of murder, but the address that she committed this murder is the same address that the guy went to pick up the package from the last episode.
Suspicious.
So in the last episode, when he went to pick up the package and the police found out about that, they interrogated him, they got the address, they went to the address, there was a drunk guy sleeping there.
Oh. A fat ass.
Dalton's not being mean to the overweight community. That is how the police described him and continue to describe him throughout that whole episode.
Yes.
But
if you're listening to episode 2 without listening to episode 1, that's not my fault. Catch up.
If you're listening to episode 2, though, you get to this point in the episode and you're like, wow, Dalton's just kind of a dick.
Fat shaming?
All they found was just a big fat ass. Just a big chunky fat ass there. They couldn't find anything else.
They find out that the crime that was committed there ended up putting this girl away, the partial DNA match from that, and that the evidence that put her away for this, she was an accessory to murder, was a styrofoam cup.
Very fucking mysterious.
Because if you remember from episode 1, there was a styrofoam cup at the crime scene with the intestines, or the kielbasa, where Nick was kidnapped. And they said, this isn't our evidence bag, and they were confused. So, he said in the moment, maybe this is some sort of like a sign or some sort of message that we were receiving.
Yeah.
It's looking more like it was a message.
There's a piece of evidence that they didn't bag up that's there.
Yeah, it's a styrofoam cup. So.
Perhaps it may be connected to another crime that we know.
Could be. So they bring this girl into an interrogation room.
Mm-hmm.
They pull her out of prison, and they're going to ask her some questions.
Yeah.
Your father stopped coming to see you 6 weeks into your sentence.
Seeing your daughter turned into some hood rat's lesbian sex slave can be rather emotional.
Wait. What?
You heard it. You heard it. What a wild Quentin Tarantino thing to put in a network television show.
3 months into my prison sentence, and my dad stopped showing up because I became some hood rat's lesbian sex slave.
She had that one. She had that one in the chamber.
Yeah, she's been waiting to throw that thing out.
Yeah, yeah.
Waiting for someone to ask her, hey, why doesn't your dad show up anymore? Rip on rally being sick.
Let me explain why.
Oh, I have been waiting for this one.
her dad is obviously the prime suspect.
Just imagine, like, her dad, like, it's the same day, it's every week he goes to visit her. He doesn't show up one day. And she goes to the room, you know, it's always a big room with little tables on it with two chairs sitting across from each other.
Yeah.
Where, you know, two people can meet, you know, where you meet someone who's in jail.
Yeah.
And she goes to sit there by herself and she looks up. Her dad doesn't come. The prison guard comes up to her and is like, well, looks like it's not this week. And she just goes, hood rat lesbian sex. Damn it.
It is her vibe. She's kind of bratty.
Just because I'm a fucking hood rat lesbian.
She's upset.
She's had a hard time in jail, okay?
She's had a hard time in jail.
I guess she was, convicted of something that she didn't do.
Yeah, she's wrongfully convicted, and the only thing that put her into prison was this styrofoam cup. Her dad is the guy that blew himself up.
Yeah.
They're asking her questions like, okay, your dad worked in aerospace. Did he know things about explosives?
Bombs and stuff.
Did he know about bombs? Oh, and she...
She's like, my cellmate is terrible, and she's using me for indescribable things. So as much fun as it sounds to talk about my dad's aerospace engineering history, I've got a lot more on my mind right now.
And they try to explain to her, like, because she says, like, okay, so he set off some sort of bomb. How many people did he kill? And they're like, they didn't kill anybody, but he kidnapped one of our friends, and we can't find him. And she goes, I don't give up. Fuck about your friend. And she actually says, I hope he dies.
Yeah.
And then she proceeds to show a very strange tattoo, a prison tattoo that she got on the palm of her hand, and asks someone to smell it.
Well, she lets us know that in the past she used to work in a nursery.
Yeah,
which is
an important detail.
She used to work with plants and stuff.
She was a horticulturist.
Yeah, and she says she loves plants so much that she got a prison tattoo of a plant and then sticks her hand out with like a really like shitty flower
it's
tattoo.
It's bad.
And tries to get people to smell it.
Yeah, she says, do you want to smell it? And I've been thinking about that since I heard it.
So, it's going nowhere with her.
No.
She's very occupied. She's got a lot going on.
She's upset.
It cuts back to the warehouse. They are scouring the place. They're searching the place for any evidence that they can find.
Yeah.
There's a group of them that are there, and maybe at the beginning of this two-part series, I would have been really careful and mentioned what their names were. I don't give a fuck about what their names
are. Warwick is one of them.
Well, I like Warwick.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's probably David, the guy who shows up late. I have no fucking clue.
No, it's not David. I know David anywhere, and he certainly wouldn't be there.
So they're talking about their next course of action, but they're also like really struggling. They're really sad. They're really pissed off that their friend is fucking taken.
Yeah.
And they're taking him.
And they're hitting a dead end here. So yeah, they're spinning their tires. They're disappointed with their leads.
Friend's gone. Bummer.
They're having a hard time finding evidence.
There's body parts all over this barn. Bummer.
No kielbasa.
There's about $1 million in cash laying all over the place covered in blood. Bummer.
One of the crime scene investigators, he has a possible lead.
Mm. Yeah, I found a trigger wire. Maybe once we reassemble all the components, we'll be able to tell where the bomb came from. Maybe that.
Yeah, maybe if we count up all the damn maybes, maybe Nick will be a live engineer. You know what I'm saying?
Warwick gets pissed and kicks a jug of some kind of crime scene fluid.
Some sort of crime scene fluid.
One that they brought, not one that was there before.
Oh, I thought it was just there.
No, they brought some kind of external crimes. Because they're a crime scene, but they have to, you know, there's
liquids.
They have liquids with them.
Yeah, how can they fake all that blood? It's all fake blood.
he gets pissed. He kicks over one of the things and he's yelling at his friend.
Because he's feeling guilty.
Yeah. He is.
He's feeling guilty because in the first episode,
if you remember,
they flipped a coin to see who was going to go for the quote unquote trash pickup and who was going to go investigate this assault at what is it called? Stripperella?
Stripperama.
Stripperama. Yeah. And he knows that literally a flip of a coin, he could be in that coffin.
Yeah.
So he's mad as buddy, his locker room buddy. He's in the coffin and it could have been just as easily him.
Yeah. Everyone's really sad about it. I mean, I get where Warwick is coming from. He really loves his friend. He misses his friend. But he also kicks a jug of an unnamed liquid at one of the other people that is actively trying to help him. It's not like he just, like, kicked a jug into the abyss, you know, into nowhere. He kicked it in the direction of his friend who's helping investigate.
Who's assembling a bomb. Who's trying to figure out where the guy is.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got these wires. And then just liquid pours
out. Oh, thanks.
But it turns out it's actually a good thing that he did that.
Yeah, because the liquid spills out of the jug and begins to seep into the ground. Very interesting at the rate at which it's seeping. It's disappearing almost immediately. Not like it would with tight-packed dirt, but as if something's buried underneath the ground of this warehouse. We're only 15 minutes in this movie. What could be underneath the ground of this warehouse?
We're mysterious.
We're mysterious. So they're digging. You know, they think, okay, this is going to be our friend. Like, we're only 15 minutes into this episode, and we're going to find our friend. They're digging. They find there's plexiglass. They're like, oh, shit. This has got to be it. It cuts to inside Nick's coffin. Nick is in there.
You can hear it.
Yeah, he hears the glass around him. It's starting to kind of, you know, release some of the pressure. He hears scratching around, you know, some like kind of cracking noise. He's starting to get excited. He starts yelling out, hey, it's me. I'm here. His friends they take the last layer of dirt off the plexiglass coffin, and they realize that it's not Nick, but it is instead a dead Dalmatian.
Yeah.
There's just a dead dog. A plexiglass they were uncovering is not the one that contains Nick. And all the effects that Nick was feeling, Nick was thinking that pressure was being relieved off of the coffin around him. Well, it was only being relieved because when he shot out that light, it burst a big hole into the side of the glass coffin, and cracks begin to splinter across the coffin.
Yes, the coffin he is in is collapsing. Dirt is starting to pour in. Mm-hmm. It's becoming a much more dire situation for him. And as far as the dog goes, it's very sad. This man clearly does bad things to dogs. For a man that doesn't commit crimes, and was an aerospace engineer committing a crime because his daughter's being put into prison, he also kills a lot of dogs.
Yeah.
So it's not all coming from just like, oh, my daughter's in prison. Like, it's just strange.
Which is actually not illegal.
Killing your dog?
Mm-mm. You can adopt a dog and kill it if you want.
But not, you can't do animal cruelty, though.
No. But because you can kill it.
You can, yeah, but he puts this dog in a plexiglass coffin.
Well, he could have killed it before he put it in the coffin.
I suppose. I mean, where'd he get the intestines?
Well, he killed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm agreeing.
He took the yeah, exactly. He got the sausage and he killed the dog.
Yeah. Well, I still fucked.
So, just so you know, if there's any listeners out there who've been thinking about killing old Sparky, like,
no,
it's completely
legal. No.
And we advise it.
No. Anyway,
if in the last episode you thought Dalton was getting a little bit dark, you're going to see my true colors now.
So it cuts back to Nick in the coffin. Mm-hmm. His situation is obviously escalated. It is not looking good.
He realized he's not, in fact, being saved.
He's not being saved. He has that tape recorder still that had that message. And he decides to hit record on that message, on that tape recorder, to leave his goodbye.
His final goodbyes to his friends and family.
My name's Nick Stokes. If anyone finds this tape, turn it into Las Vegas. PD, there should be a reward.
So it cuts to the crime lab. They're still watching the live stream of him recording this. They can't hear what he's saying, but Grissom, apparently, in a previous episode that we did not watch, apparently he was going deaf So he learned how to lip read.
Yeah.
And he's lip reading what he's saying, and he's realizing he's basically giving his last will and testament.
Yeah. He can read his lips that he's saying Grissom, and he's saying, like, I'm sorry that I've disappointed you, Grissom.
Which, again, is a reference to a previous episode.
He says, I'm sorry for disappointing you. And Wikipedia told us that this is most likely due to his affair with a prostitute.
And you should never apologize for that.
You know? Even on your deathbed.
Even on your deathbed. You're in a coffin. You don't apologize.
Yeah. Like, it's not your fault.
It's not your fault.
And it's definitely not his fault either.
And it's not her. It's not the prostitute's fault either.
No.
Everybody's fine. He's going to sleep with prostitutes. He's not married.
Yeah, it's all good, man.
Do what you want to do. Isn't it a fair? Maybe he's married. We don't know.
Yeah. We don't know enough about crime scene investigation TV show in order to
Yeah,
to
he might be that. Like in a committed relationship and then he did that.
The only crime that he committed
was adultery.
It was adultery.
Oh, fuck you, Nick. Hope that coffin collapses the rest of the way.
But yeah, Grissom is watching him, you know, saying his last goodbyes and stuff. And then we start to see Nick kind of twitching and freaking out a little bit.
Starts convulsing.
Yeah, we hear, you know, because there's all the screens at the crime scene investigation lab have Nick's live stream pulled up.
Yeah.
So you hear someone from across the lab go, "I think he's convulsing."
Yeah, they think he's running out of oxygen and they think this is it.
Yeah.
Like, Nick is dying. But they notice as they're watching him convulse, it's not actually the lack of air that's getting him worked up. He's getting infested with ants because the plexiglass broke.
Fire ants.
Fire ants.
Which, if I were in this situation...
Oh, God. I know what he's about to say.
I would just eat the ants.
Yeah. This guy's been talking about eating ants.
Ever since we watched this
Ever
part.
Since we watched this.
Look, you're underground. You're buried. You don't have food. You don't have water. You just start eating ants, man. That's
only
a good snack.
Been under
That's
there
protein.
For 12 hours.
That's protein.
12 hours.
How many grams of protein? Look, 12 hours without food? I'd start to get hungry. I feel like I have to eat every 4 hours. At least 20 grams of protein every 4 hours. He's been there for 12 hours. How many grams of protein is that? That's got to be like 100 grams. You better start eating ants now.
I do feel like one ant's probably about a gram of protein. Because it's got to be all protein.
Yeah, but one ant being a gram.
Maybe not a gram.
That's probably
half a gram.
I would say probably 20 ants is a gram.
Really?
Yeah.
Next week we're going to find out how many fire ants
is one gram.
I'm going to write that down. Fire ants gram.
But he needs the nutrients. He needs the sustenance, and I would start eating the ants.
Oh, I know you would. You made it very clear your intentions.
Also, these little fuckers are going to start biting. They're fire ants. They're going to start biting me. They're going to start fucking with my shit. They're going to start ruining my cool experience down here. Okay?
You think it's just like a sensory deprivation tank?
Yeah.
Like he's having a meditative.
Exactly. This is his one chance to meditate, and these little fuckers are ruining it. So the least he can do is get a snack out of it, you know?
Fair enough, man.
I've convinced you.
You have not convinced me. I have just become reluctantly accepting of the fact that you are going to eat these ants. And there's nothing I can do about it. You can eat the ants. That's fine. I also think they're venomous. Like, I don't know if you should be eating a ton of fire
ants.
Well,
if they're going to bite me anyway and inject their venom, then the least I can do is get some protein out of it, okay?
That's true.
Some kind of sustenance. I know it's been 12 hours. I don't know how long I'm going to be down there for.
That's true.
I don't know if I need to start squishing and collecting. Look, how many ants could fit in the base of my thumb? If I start suffocating them one by one, I create a little ant pile in the corner of my coffin.
Ants on a log.
How many snacks do you have? You could probably get a good few handfuls of just straight ant.
It's true. So if the glass breaks for you and you see the ants pour in, your first reaction is not, oh shit. Your first thought is...
Dinner!
Hey, that's silver linings. This is good. It's very good.
So they notice... Grissom zooms in. He zooms and enhances this video live stream. He sees the ants. And meanwhile, Nick is inside the coffin. He's tearing his shirt into little pieces.
He's got a latex glove that he pulls off and starts shoving it up his nose.
He's trying to cover all of his orifices so that the fire ants don't crawl in.
And you would just open your mouth.
Yeah.
You
cover all the other ones in. And just let them crawl in.
You just like,
that takes out half the work.
Yeah, you just let them crawl
just
into
crawl
your mouth.
All the way down to the digestive system. I don't even have to chew, man. That's a perfect snack.
I wish all my snacks crawled in. This is great.
Grissom has a really weird reaction to these ants.
Yeah, neither of us liked this.
He sees Nick kind of swatting them away, and he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, just like that. Keep doing it.
That's it, Nicky. Stay still.
He's watching the ants crawl on him.
They won't bite. As much.
That sounds like a super villain line to say.
Yeah, it sounds like he put the ants in there. It's okay.
They won't bite. As much. If you don't move, they won't bite you. That's it. Oh, come on, Belle. Yeah. That's it.
It sounds like he's watching porn.
Yeah.
A little more.
Okay, dude. That's fucking weird.
He's like, come on, a little bit more.
It sounds just really like that. Creepy.
A little slower. Yeah, I'm almost there.
No, Gabe. We gotta stop that. We can't do imitations of this. Because people can't see us. They don't know what the fuck's going on. And in fact, they don't know what's going on in this clip either.
Yeah, the people walking around the crime scene lab are watching him watch this and don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, they just see him just really enjoying the fact that his buddy is being eaten by ants.
What he's actually doing is waiting for one of the ants to crawl on the lens of the camera so that he can take a really quick screenshot, because he needs to get a more close identification of the type of ant that this is, that actually is on him.
One of the ants ends up crawling right into his line of sight, basically across the camera lens. He jumps up from his seat. He snaps the picture. He goes, he's got this little library in the crime scene investigation lab.
He does. It's full of books.
Yeah. And there's like a little statue of like Socrates or something in the back.
Where's my ant book?
There's a book, Cities of Destiny. Because you need to know Cities of Destiny if you're going to investigate crimes.
Yeah. I think it's personal library.
Atlantis. Another City of Destiny.
Rome.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, man.
So he's flipping through his ant book, because I guess he's got ant books. And
we all got ant books.
He ends up finding the exact ant that he needed to find.
Solenopsis invicta.
They're fire ants. Very rare in Nevada. They don't like our soil. The only places you find them around Vegas are in plant and tree nurseries.
There's 11 nurseries in the greater Las Vegas area.
Okay, I've got the webcam trace down to here.
And the data from the black box in Walter Gordon's truck gave us a 23-mile travel radius.
They're drawing circles on the map.
Kind of make
I've
a Venn diagram.
Two nurseries within the overlap area. Here and here.
Wait. Kelly Gordon, the daughter, worked with plants. Hold on.
She rushes back into her office. She has some kind of file, maybe on Kelly, that might illuminate which of the two nurseries it could be.
So she points to one of the X's. There's only two. Works out pretty well.
Yeah.
And they realize that the nursery that Kelly worked at when she was a horticulturist before she got thrown into prison is probably where he's being kept.
Yeah. It's very convenient that one of the two nurseries was the one that she worked at.
They also realize that Nick probably only has roughly 90 minutes of oxygen left.
Yeah, they start doing the calculations a little bit more, because in the Dalmatian version of the coffin, the buried alive thing, the one that they found that they thought was Nick but wasn't actually Nick, it had the exact setup that he has. All the same lights, the same fan, it was buried the same level underground, it has the same electronic system, and they figured out, okay, if we had the lights on, the lights draw more power than the fans. So where we thought we might have had more time before, because we've had the lights on for so long, it's less time.
Yeah. It's about 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's not looking good. Luckily, they rally their troops, they all head over, they are going to go find their buddy.
So the cops descend on the nursery. Mm-hmm. They know where Nick is. It's just a matter of finding where he specifically is at this nursery. But he's underground.
Yeah.
So there's going to still be some looking around and investigating.
They ask the guy who works there. They're like, hey, do you have any reports of fire ants? Where's the biggest fire ant mound? Let's start there. The guy's like, hey, normally people want to stay as far as they can away from the fire ants. I don't know what you guys would want near there. I don't know if it has anything to do with you guys being fucking crime scene investigators. That weird guy with the shovel who was here last week and his daughter who used to work for us that killed our fucking plant waterer. I don't know if it has anything to do with that shit, but normally people want to stay from away from fire ants.
It's got anything to do with all those dead dogs.
This must have happened to Sparky. I used to have 20 dogs that lived here with me, and they're all gone.
They're all underground. I keep finding them in all these plexiglass boxes.
And there's no kielbasa left for any of us. They pull out their advanced equipment, and they have this, like, device that's attached to a long antenna thing. Looks like something that would, like, be on, like, ghost hunters or whatever.
It's like a divining rod.
Yeah, they're, like, to find EMF waves or whatever. I guess that's what it does. I'm sure this is a real device out there.
It seems to be specifically looking for the GPS or the Wi-Fi broadcast of the live stream. So mm-hmm. She's, like, walking around and, I mean, she seems to be closing in on it.
Yeah. I mean, there's one point where she's like, guys, I think that I found the webcam signal, which I don't know how she knows it's specifically the webcam signal and not some other internet signal, but she's like, I think I got it. All the cops rush over to her. They see there's a little like tube in the ground.
Mm-hmm, like a PVC pipe.
Yeah. They're like, one could possibly be getting air through. There's a second one about 6 feet away from that, about the size of a plexiglass coffin away from that.
And she yells down the tube.
Yeah.
She's like, Nick, we're coming for you. I was like, don't yell down the tube. That'd be so scary if you were inside that plexiglass tube.
They start trying to dig him up. They're furiously digging. Well, Nick is inside the coffin. His condition is getting worse and worse and worse. He's getting bit up by these fire ants. And then it cuts to back at the crime scene investigation lab.
Yes.
We can only assume at this point that he's been saved. But unfortunately, this section of the crime scene investigation lab, it's the coroner's office.
It's a damn shame they didn't get to him sooner.
I sure will miss him.
It's Nick's body's on a slab.
You know, David, I've seen fire ant bites in my time, but never anything like this.
Well,
do you think he suffered? Do I think he suffered?
That guy's neck.
Yes, definitely.
All right. On three.
This is where it gets real Tarantino.
Dos, tres!
So Nick is awake on the slab.
Would you care to do the Y incision?
It's all black and white.
Why not?
He's watching his own autopsy.
Yeah, these guys are, like, having a great time. They're playing music. They're like, oh, do you want to do the middle, the Y incision or whatever? They grab, like, a huge dirty cleaver and start slicing him up. They're laughing. They're having a great time.
They're passing his organs around.
Yeah, they're like, the dad comes in at one point, and he's like, so, what do you think happened to my son? And they're like, well, we know that he died, but he always had a good heart. And they pull out his heart and hand the heart to the dad.
Yeah.
It's a weird fucking macabre, you know, Quentin Tarantino. There's blood everywhere. You see organs. You see two guys laughing at the idea of cutting someone open.
It's the one of the very few moments where you're like, oh, Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin
Tarantino directed this.
It's his carrot-like brother. It's his Twin Tarantino.
It's a really dark scene, and obviously, I think it goes without saying, this is all taking place in Nick's mind. He's slipping into...
Yes, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. He's slipping into a delirious state because he's getting... he's getting poisoned by fire ants, and he's probably deprived of oxygen, mm-hmm. and he's just imagining his own autopsy and people not really giving a shit about him and disrespecting his body.
I would say, luckily, this is all a dream, because we then cut back to the nursery, and we see the team still digging for him.
Frantically.
So they haven't saved him, they haven't gotten the body out, and his body isn't now at a coroner's office. It was all a dream. Or it's all good, man. You know?
They keep, while they're digging, they're looking at this wristwatch that's counting down from 90 minutes, because that's how much oxygen he was supposed to have left. It counts down to zero, and they all pause to exchange a glance with each other.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you know this isn't probably the most exact timing of oxygen. So maybe he's either already dead or he has moments left. don't pause.
Don't stop.
Don't pause to be like, oh shit, the time ran out.
Well, and there's like 9 of them probably that are standing there around the hole.
And 8 of them are not doing shit.
No, one of them has a shovel. Maybe 2 of them have a shovel. If it was someone who worked with me and there was a potential that I could save them,
yeah.
All 8 of them should be on their hands and knees digging out, and then one guy with a
And also,
do the best you can.
I'm just going to throw this out there. If I am showing up with, I mean, we saw all the cops that arrived. There's probably 15 cops that showed up. You're telling me you brought 2 shovels when you know, best case scenario, you're digging your friend out of a hole?
Yeah,
brought 2 shovels?
2 shovels, bring more. Bring a fucking wheelbarrow with you.
Bring an excavator.
You're at a nursery. You don't have more shovels at a nursery?
Good fucking point.
There's some on the wall right there.
There's 2 people with shovels and other people pausing to be like, oh, it's been 90 minutes.
Oh, looks like that's it. Looks like we all better just go home now.
Looks like that's lunch, guys.
Yeah, he's dead. Yeah, no, he's gone.
Definitely, 100%, he's gone.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't check the math. No, I've seen Supernova. Yeah, no, I know math is usually wrong, but I wouldn't check it on this one.
They do keep digging.
Yeah, and they end up getting to the plexiglass. This time, unlike the Dalmatian time, it is really Nick, because we see from his perspective inside the coffin of a flashlight shining in through, then we see from the outside of the coffin, we see poor Nick.
He's looking rough.
He's like shaking.
He's got latex gloves shoved up his nose and into his ears.
He's got fucking welts all over him. He's got crying.
Covered in bubble gum. He's having a bad time.
And you know what they do is they see their buddy all, you know, covered in fire ants and stuff, and they start calling to each other. They're like, hey, grab the fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
So they get a fire extinguisher, they crack open the lid of the coffin, and they start shooting fire extinguisher into the coffin.
To kill the ants.
I don't think they know what fire ants means. I don't think that the fire is...
the fire ants!
They don't produce fire. You guys know that, right?
I understand that they're trying to suffocate them, but it's also like this plexiglass sealed box... It's probably mostly full of CO2 because, and you're really concerned about how much oxygen he has left.
Yeah.
And you're going to shoot more CO2 into it. It's just, let him get bit for 5 more minutes with ants.
Also, just break off the lid. You already got it cracked open. Break off the lid, get him out, dust him off a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, like, he will be so much happier to be breathing fresh air and to be standing up than to be covered in fire ants inside of a box, now suffocating even more.
Yeah.
Which, I guess the reason why they can't just get him out immediately is because one of them gets a call. There's someone back at the crime scene investigation lab who was looking at the fake plexiglass box, the fake coffin.
The one with the Dalmatian in it.
Yeah, and they noticed 2 little divots in the bottom of it that would be the perfect size to hold plastic explosives.
Specifically pressure sensors
that
would trigger plastic explosives. So they come to the determination that very likely...
There could be
C4 completely underneath this plexiglass coffin, and that as soon as he got out of the coffin, it would probably explode and kill him.
So they gotta keep blasting him with the fire extinguisher.
Still open the fucking lid. That's not like the lid's attached. It's not changing the weight. Open it up and let him breathe.
I mean, we talked about this a little bit briefly, just the two of us, but there's so many things that I would do to get him at it. Like, you could open the lid, you could go stand in the box and then him get out so that the guy who's about to die can get medical attention while you deal with the whole bomb situation.
You could probably give him some medical attention in the box.
In the box still!
You could bring an O2 tank and hook him up to a gas mask and just give him some fresh air.
Just give him some fresh air.
Do something.
No, because they shoot fire extinguisher
in the closed box.
In the closed box.
They don't even take the lid off. It's like, it's crazy. Honestly, it's almost like they didn't want fire ants on them.
No.
And they were like, keep him in the box. Kill him in the box. He'll be fine. But they have to talk to him through the glass, and they're talking him down because he's full panic mode. He's like, let me out of this box. And they're like,
it's Grissom.
It's Grissom.
Yeah.
And Grissom is like, I'm going to open this box up, but you can't get up right away. Yeah. I'm so sorry, but you can't leave the box.
And he lets him know, I've got a plan. He looks around. There's like a little dirt mover sort of thing.
Yeah, big excavator.
He comes up with a plan.
Okay, we're going to use the dirt from the backhoe to equalize his weight. I need a rope and a carabiner.
I'm going to hang myself first.
Poncho, we're going to open the lid and get you out. But I need you to stay lying down, okay? Or else you'll blow us all up. Do you understand that? Do you promise? Poncho, say, I promise.
They call him Poncho sometimes.
They do call him Poncho sometimes.
His dad, it was like a kid name for him, Poncho. They call him Poncho. He's not Mexican.
He's not Mexican, no.
He could be.
I don't think
he... he doesn't look Mexican.
He doesn't look Mexican. I've been fooled before. I don't know why he's making... I think he's just trying to keep him talking.
Yeah, I guess so.
Keeping him, like, lucid.
But it just seems like kind of a dick move to be like, say that you'll stay put when we release you.
Promise.
Say I promise, Poncho.
He's like, and also, if you get up, we're all gonna blow up.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna have fire ants on us. We're gonna be all itchy. And I don't want that, and you don't want that, do you, Poncho? It's like, get this man out of the fucking box. So their plan, then, is we're gonna open up this lid. Which shows he could have fucking done that a second ago.
Yeah. We also, at this point, we don't know... quite really what the plan is all the way.
No.
I thought that maybe, like, he was gonna, like, they were gonna open the box, and then he was gonna, like, sit on one side of the box, and then they were gonna pour dirt in the other side.
And then slowly relieve his way out of the box.
As they slowly fill that 200 pounds of dirt in. Also, how does one know what exactly 200 pounds of dirt is?
If you should tell me to eyeball it, I'd probably be wrong.
If it's pressure sensor, let's just hope that it's, like, the bottom threshold of pressure,
yeah,
that, like, if it goes over 200 pounds, that it's not going to blow up anyway.
That would be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's eating all those ants in there.
So, like, so he's gained weight.
Like, so it's really good that it's not actually that, pressure sensor works.
That covers that plot hole, because it would have gone off if it was a maximum.
He's eaten upwards of 50,000 ants at this point.
Which is only a gram and a half.
It's a gram and a half of ants, as we know.
So... That's not what happens, though. They don't slowly relieve the pressure.
No.
They get the dirt mover. They fill it up with 200 pounds of dirt.
How they determine that?
We don't know. And then they hold that dirt above where the coffin is.
Yeah.
The coffin's open. They tie a rope around the guy's chest.
Well, they put the carabiner on his belt buckle.
Yeah, they put the carabiner on the
belt. And they tie a rope to that.
Uh-huh. And then on the count of three... they release the dirt while they have, like, six dudes all pulling the rope to pull him out of the coffin, so that theoretically the dirt should hit at the same time as he gets pulled out of the coffin, thereby equalizing the weight and thereby equalizing the pressure. And I know that makes a little bit of sense, but that's not what happens either.
No.
That's not what happens.
No, the dirt's falling. They simultaneously are pulling him up by the rope, so he's, like, simultaneously getting buried by dirt and also ripped through dirt.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, the whole fucking coffin explodes.
It explodes anyway.
It explodes, and I guess what they should have said is just, like, we're going to use the dirt to dampen the explosion.
Or that's what ended up happening anyway.
Maybe that's what happens.
Why would they need exactly 200 pounds of dirt?
Right. They thought that they were going to do an Indiana Jones.
Equalize the weight.
Just whoosh, and then, but that's not what happens. The bomb goes off.
Yeah, and the dirt saves him from dying.
I think the dirt saves him from dying, which is just what I would have gone with to begin with.
Yeah.
But he ends up on the ground, and he's shaking. He's covered in ant boils. Mm-hmm. He's dehydrated. He's not hungry. He ate a lot of ants. He's really fucked up. And I will say, I don't know this actor's name, and I should have looked it up. Really good actor.
He does a great job. You look like here. I mean, watching it, you feel concerned for this person's well-being.
Yeah, when they open the casket, he's shaking in the casket, and he's like crying
and convulsing, and
he's convulsing, and like another actor might have tried to play it kind of tough,
yeah,
and be like, "Oh, thank God you showed up."
Yeah,
no, he's just like weeping.
Yeah, no, he looks like a man who's just been underground for however many
getting
hours,
getting eaten by ants, like a horrible Fear Factor episode.
You're buried alive and then eaten alive.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy too that's how they decide to get him out of the ground.
You know?
Because it's like, if you have been living this whole episode with the fear of being buried alive, Well, now we're going to take away the coffin part.
Yep.
We're going to just make it so there's fucking dirt hitting you in the face, hitting you over your whole body, and you're going to feel the resistance of every single grain.
He kind of had the full buried alive experience, because not only does he get buried in the coffin, then there's dirt on him, and he also starts getting eaten by bugs.
Yeah.
He has the whole death experience. It's the most traumatic thing.
I just hope that 200 pounds of dirt that they dropped on him didn't have any fire ants in there too.
Oh no.
Because then they just have to start blasting him with the fire extinguisher.
We don't see his recovery.
No.
We don't see him dealing with it after the fact. But what we do see is it cuts to him visiting Styrofoam Cup Girl, horticulturist woman. I don't know her name.
She described herself as a horny dungeon sex queen lesbian princess, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly. You know who we're talking about.
Yeah.
He visits her, and she's like, why are you even here?
What do you want me to say? I'm sorry.
Nah, you didn't do anything to me. What your dad did, I guess it's because he loves you so much.
What?
Hey, Kelly. Kelly.
Kelly, that's her name.
Pick it up.
She hangs up on him. Reluctantly pulls the phone back.
In a few years, when you get out of here, don't take it with you.
Yeah, he gives her some sage advice. When you get out of here, don't take it with you. Because I think that when he got out of that box, he did take it with him. Because he, I think, has some pretty horrible PTSD.
And he's trying to let it go, and his therapist was like, the best way that you can do this is go talk to her.
Yeah, probably. And then it does show her go back to her prison cell, and she does in some decent acting, I think. Mm-hmm. You see it in her eyes. She seems to like be like, yeah, I'm going to let this go. I'm going to get out of here in a couple years, and I'm going to let this all be behind me.
I mean, it is a testament to good acting if you could just watch someone's face and be able to determine that they've let something that's bothered them their whole lives go in a moment. You know, I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it too.
CSI. I got to watch more of it. We love it. That's the end of the episode.
That is the end of this episode. This is the Quentin Tarantino Grave Danger, parts 1 and 2. I like it. I actually, as far as CSI episodes go, I really enjoy this one. I've seen a few, and I enjoy this one.
If this were to be like a whole movie that you went to go like see in the cinema, would you buy it? Would you be like, yeah, this felt like I just watched a whole movie? Or would it still feel like, this kind of feels like a procedural crime?
This feels like a procedural crime drama to me. But I will tell you, yes, I would go by and see this movie, because there is a movie called Buried with Ryan Reynolds that is this exact plot. I rented that Redbox.
So it's the same idea that he gets taken and then buried? He gets kidnapped
and he is buried in a coffin. In that version, he has a cell phone, so he's talking to the police, and he's trying to guide them to where he is, but he doesn't know where he is. I will not spoil how that one ends, but watch Buried. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see, like, if we were to make this better, if we were to make this a movie rather than being a two-part TV show, just, like, take out all the really, like, you know, just unnecessary procedural crime drama things, like... there was a scene at the beginning where there was two guys playing the Dukes of Hazzard board game, which we cut out, which I shouldn't even mention at this point, because now you guys are like, what? I want to see that scene!
No, I think because this is a crime procedural, there's a lot of little things of like, oh, these two characters are doing their regular character things. If it was a movie, you wouldn't have that kind of things. As a plot for a movie, I like it. I liked Buried.
And probably if you just cut out half the characters, because since you have a TV show that goes over time, you can develop a bunch of different characters that everybody can fall in love with. But if you had just four people that worked at CS, like, we probably remember the names of four people.
Oh, yeah.
And those would be the four people we'd need in order for it to be a movie.
But there's like eight people in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And people have been watching this show for 5 years at this point. So they're like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
It's also the season finale of season 5. So they've been with these characters a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to cinema, what would you rate this and why?
I'm going to give it a solid 6.5.
Yeah, I would say about 7 or 6.
Yeah.
I'm like right in that same water with you.
Yeah, it's good. I was curious what's going to happen. It kept me engaged. Mm-hmm. Some of the choices are silly. Mm-hmm. Some of the characters are silly. And that's a lot the only thing brings it down.
A lot of it, though, like, I feel like we're nitpickers here on Sword of Cinema.
Yes, here we are.
And that, like, a lot of the plot holes and stuff and things that we thought were silly and ridiculous, like, weren't as silly and ridiculous as some of the other things that we've watched.
Which is why I'd say a 6.5.
You know? Yeah. So, like, you kind of have to give it. Like, I guarantee you, the movie that we watch next week on Sword of Cinema.
Is what?
Will be even sillier.
Oh, yeah. It will be sillier. We'll see you next week, guys.
This has been a Shockfish Media production. If you like the show, please leave a rating and share the podcast with a friend. It really helps us out. For more Sword of Cinema, including clips from the movies, give us a follow on social media @SwordofCinema. See you next week.